Without even a second's thought, my training kicked in straight away. I didn't have to think about anything. Reduced the power on the aeroplane, flew the aeroplane, and we still had plenty of remaining runway ahead of us and landed straight ahead.
Welcome aboard the High Fly Media podcast, dedicated to sharing the stories and experiences of the amazing people who make aviation happen. From pilots like me to engineers, air traffic controllers and others, I'll explore their personal journeys, the challenges they've faced and the triumphs they've achieved. My name is Damien, and I'll be your host. Whether you're a seasoned aviation enthusiast or new to the field, I invite you to join me as we take off on this journey of discovery, uncovering the people and passion behind aviation, one story at a time. On this episode of the High Fly Media podcast, I'm joined by special guest Gregory Mochinski. Gregory's not your average aviation expert. He's a contract designer and product manager who's soared to great heights both in the industry and beyond. Gregory's passion for aviation is matched only by his love for adventure. Whether he's paragliding over the stunning landscapes or diving into the depths of the ocean, Gregory always finds a way to push his limits and explore new horizons. His unique experiences have given him a fresh perspective on life and have inspired him to pursue his dream of becoming a commercial pilot. Today I'm excited to have Gregory on the show and to share his insights on aviation and discuss his exciting journey. So fasten your seatbelts and get ready for a thrilling ride as we take off into the world of aviation and adventure with Gregory Mochinski on the High Fly Media podcast. Welcome, Gregory.
Thank you, Damien. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, look, we've known each other for all of what, 7 days now? 6 days.
Yes.
6 days. I was fortunate. I was actually here interviewing Paul Strike, which you will have no doubt listened to my interview with him, and I bumped into Gregory, who actually works here. Trained here?
Trained here, work here, hang around like a bad smell.
Very good.
Yep.
So reading between the lines, general aviation tragic is what I'm hearing?
Extremely general aviation tragic, yes.
Rightio. Yeah. So tell us a bit about, I'd like to delve into not so much your childhood and anything that might have gone on, but how did you get here? How did you get into aviation? What triggered the passion? All of those kinds of things.
I'm probably one of your typical pilots that as a boy loved aeroplanes and playing with aeroplanes and models and building on models and just never really grew up. I was fortunate enough that when I was 16 in high school, my parents sent me to a week-long flight camp at TVSA down in Bacchus Marsh in Victoria, which really spurred on the aviation passion because I got to have a couple of lessons in a Cessna. We had to go in a glider, Tiger Moth ride around Point Cook, and just spent a week being immersed in aviation and meeting pilots, and the passion just grew from there, but it's been a really long journey. Just kid that never loved aeroplanes and never stopped.
Oh, that's fantastic. I can relate to that very much so. So that camp happened in your teens, you said?
Yeah, when I was 16, I think.
16. Yep. And you, as I read in the intro, you've had a career in areas other than aviation. What brought you back to, well, here we are on a Friday morning sitting at Caboolture Airfield and I can hear a Tecnam starting up behind me, so it's going to get noisy in a second. What brought you into this world of aviation when now you're an RAOS flight instructor?
That's a really good question because if you'd asked me, do you want to be an instructor one day 5 years ago, I would have said, what are you talking about? Don't be stupid. That's just silly. This is just for fun. So I first time I learnt to fly, so in my life now I'd say I've learnt to fly 4 times.
Right. Do you want to unpack that a little bit?
Sure. So first time I started out in sailplanes back when I was sort of 16, 17 after that experience down in a little town in Victoria, Leongatha, east of Melbourne. Dad used to drive me down on the weekends and hang out with me for the whole day while I got maybe 4 minutes worth of glider time, and we pulled gliders around, and I can't remember exactly how long we did that for, and I think I only ever got about 10 hours gliding time and didn't go solo at that stage, but that was my first experience of learning to fly. That always got fond memories of it, and obviously my father coming with me, and that's pretty dedicated as a dad. So he was just let that passion for aviation get instilled. And it wasn't until many, many years later when I was working and could afford it myself, I went and got myself a personal loan and trundled off down to Latrobe Valley Aero Club in West Gippsland and said, here's money, put it in the bank, I want to learn to fly. And I spent a few years there learning to fly in Cessna 172s. I think they were M's from memory, but don't quote me on that. And that was back in the days when we still had GFPT.
Mm-hmm. So back in my day.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So that was 2003, I think I did that. I was going through the logbook the other night and went to have my first solo in a Cessna 172 out of Traralgon there. Still remember it like it was yesterday, as most pilots will. Shaking like a leaf, taxiing out to the runway, went through all my checks, run-ups, lined up on the runway, just hands shaking, nerves were peaking, and as soon as the aeroplane left the ground, complete and utter calm. I'd like to say I flew a perfect circuit, and that's the way my memory is. Whether that's whether that's real or not is you'll have to find the CFI back in those days. And it landed, taxied back, and then got out of the aeroplane, and the CFI is like, well, how is that? And I was just speechless. I'm like, he said, better than sex? And it was like, yeah. I'm not sure whether that was whether I actually had anything to compare to back in those days, but that's another story. So that was the second time.
Yep.
And then I did some navs at that point and then ran out of money and life got in the way. And somewhere in amongst all the next 10 or 12 years, I moved from Victoria up to Queensland, tried to dip my toes in the world of digital animation to see whether that was a career I wanted to do, and decided that was too much like prostituting yourself to the industry for no money. Mm-hmm. Actually, the trigger for the third time I learned to fly was I went on a trekking holiday through Nepal and got to the end of the trek and doing the Annapurna circuit in Pokhara there, which is turns out is a pretty big draw card for paragliding, the paragliding world. And a couple on the tour said, oh, we're going up to the hill to go paragliding. You want to join us? I went, oh, yeah, you know, it's flying. Da, 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 da. Went up the hill, had a Russian pilot. His name was Roddick. Remember it vividly. He's like, oh, today my camera broken. You bring your own? Okay, cool. We launched off this mountain. I got no clue what's going on, just complete oblivious to any of the risks and involved with paragliding, as you do. Ignorance is bliss. Had an amazing flight, landed down by the lake, got home from the holiday and immediately went and found the closest paragliding school in southeast Queensland, which happened to be down in Canungra, which turns out to be a world-class paragliding site in the area in paragliding.
Yeah, wow.
I had world championship paragliding competitions there and annual Australian championships. And for about 10 years, I got heavily involved in the paragliding community and was actually the secretary of the Hang Gliding Club for a while. Involved in multiple paragliding competitions, not necessarily flying, but helping organise and run retrieve buses. And it's just being in and around anything that flies, just, as you know, brings me pleasure and passion.
Yep.
So that was number three.
Mm-hmm.
How many times did I say? Four.
Yep.
I think it's five. And eventually, somewhere in the air amongst all that, I met my current partner who we met through paragliding. It was lust at first sight on the paragliding launch site. And paragliding, like anything aviation related, it is time intensive. You got to commit. And again, life gets in the way. Work happened, started to get doing some really interesting projects in the building industry, which meant started to get a bit more money again, and then finally decided it was time to go back to fixed-wing powered flying.
Mm-hmm.
Started out at Redcliffe Aero Club, got current on there and got my GFPT converted over to an RPL, and started doing some navs there. And I think it was one of the Red Thunder air shows out at Brisbane Valley. Paul and Karen were there with promoting Come and Experience Formation Flying Fun Day. My brother-in-law and I had both been learning at Redcliffe, and he was mad keen on formation, said, we've got to go and try this. Oh, okay, cool. never thought much about formation. We came and met Paul and Karen and went on the formation fun day, and we had a ball. And then Paul and Karen, I think they'd only recently started the RAOS school, and there was a open day they held. So we came along to that. I went for a tiff, I guess, in the Fox Bat.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I guess the rest is history there. We really enjoyed coming up here and decided, well, let's bugger off the GA for a while and look at the RAOS stuff. So I learned to fly again with RAOS. And Paul and Karen, we just found Paul and Karen to be fantastic, amazing people. The social aspect of the school here is just nothing like I've experienced at other, particularly in your big aero clubs. It's a very tight-knit little group. And we just kept doing more training, nav endorsement, formation ratings, which I enjoyed so much more than I ever expected. And now I'm a bit of a formation fanatic. And there's a group of us that we try and fly regularly. It doesn't always happen. And that was probably 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We were just flying and enjoying ourselves and being part of the community. And one day I just jokingly said to Paul and Karen, oh, so is there an opening for an instructor here? And they said, well, actually, funnily enough, how many hours you got? I said, oh, this many. And they said, oh, well, that's the minimum for instructor. If you're keen, why not do instructor rating? I went, oh, okay. And it was something I'd honestly never thought of doing prior to that. And it was right place, right time, right frame of mind. Right people, exactly.
Yep.
A right point in my life. I just went, well, why not? Let's give it a go. If I don't give this a go and then regret it later on, I might never get the opportunity again. And then I embarked on the instructor rating, and I'm a slow learner. It took me 12 months to do the instructor rating, and I was still working full-time at the time and doing this part-time.
Well, see, I'd argue that's right pace.
Okay.
Right.
Fair enough. Right pace. Yep. And we got getting towards the end of the instructor rating. I decided that I needed to do something so I could finish it and get it done. And many discussions with my partner, I decided to quit my full-time job. I was working up the Sunny Coast at the time, rejigged my lifestyle. I had a mate that was looking for somebody to help him out with his business, still in the building industry, and could do that part-time and come here part-time. And I'm fortunate that I have a really supportive partner, because I wouldn't have been able to do it without her.
Mm-hmm.
I took a drastic pay cut in order to make this change. Discussed it with Paul and Karen, said, hey, I can do this, get down here a couple of days a week, get this finished, and then continue that once I get my rating. And I'm fortunate enough that Paul and Karen, they went and got their training approval for instructors so I could do my instructor rating with them. And they wanted to have me as an instructor when I finished the course. So I'm really, really fortunate in the point of view that I basically just created a job for myself.
Yeah.
And didn't have to worry about doing the training and then, okay, now what do I do with it?
Yeah. I think right circumstances.
Exactly.
The universe spoke.
Yeah. The universe had spoken. And we were doing throughout the course of the training, it became apparent that there was a lot more involved and a lot more time needed on their part than they possibly realized initially. And again, the universe spoke, and fortunately they knew a guy that could help with the training, semi-retired, been in the industry for many, many years, was involved with CASA, heavily involved with RAOS, and really experienced pilot, really nice guy, and the absolutely most patient man I have ever met. The hair that he could have pulled out with me trying to learn how to fly the whiteboard, I like to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how he does that. I would have crumpled, because that was my biggest hurdle. Was I could fly the aeroplane, and I would say I could fly reasonably well. The instructing in the aeroplane was not the biggest hurdle for me. It was learning how to drive the whiteboard and fly the whiteboard and take what I knew, translate it into something that was comprehensible but simple enough to be able to impart to the student I was trying to teach.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fortunate that PJ was so patient with me, and was just happy to let me work at my own pace. And the combination of having PJ, Paul and Karen as my mentors is, you know, a 3-to-1 student-teacher ratio is, I would say, unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just extremely fortunate to have had and still have those people as my mentors to get me through to the instructor rating. And here I am now. I'm teaching. I've probably only got 50 hours instructing now. I've been over the last few months. I got the instructor rating late last year.
Yep.
And I haven't looked back. Just absolutely love it.
I've wondered, you know, as far as being a student pilot myself, I've wondered what it would be like. And I think back to my first instructor. His name's Kane Binney. Can't tell you what he's doing at the moment. I actually don't know.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, well, he was about 10 years my junior at the time. I learned to fly when I was about early 30s.
Yep.
And he was just so, he was so patient and tolerant. But I wonder, and you can probably answer this question, no slight on any of your students, they're all learning. If you've had moments, so I wondered if he'd had moments where he was just like, oh, crap. Like I do remember coming in on short final into Toowoomba in the Trauma Hawk and him, it was one of my first or second flights and his hands sitting on his legs, but I could see them occasionally, his fingers had just like jump up, like not off his leg, but you could tell he was about ready to grab the controls.
Yep.
Have you had those moments?
So I haven't had any students try and kill me yet. It's coming. I'm sure it's coming because everybody I've spoken to says, yeah, we've all got them.
Yeah.
So we talk about the circle of trust here, and my circle of trust with students is much smaller than possibly Paul and Karen's. And when I talk about the circle of trust, I'm talking about how close my hands are to the controls at certain phases of flight and how much I'm shadowing the student. And on base and final, my hands are hovering on my knees to be able to grab the controls at a moment's notice. And that's more an experience thing than a trust thing with the students at this stage, because the students that I fly with are all really diligent and really work hard to fly well.
Mm-hmm.
So far, I say so far in inverted commas, when I'm flying with the students, I have no apprehension or nerves and I don't feel worried about the students because I'm probably simultaneously confident in my ability to be able to fly the aeroplane if anything goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But also I'm fortunate that so I talked about PJ is the most patient man on the planet. The other most patient man on the planet I know is my father. And I guess that rubs off over time too. And the older I get, so I'm a more mature new instructor, just turned 40 last year. So I guess if I'd done it 20 years ago when I was in my 20s, it would be a very different story. But with things that I've done and, as you mentioned, adventures I've had and experiences, I guess I've mellowed a lot and tend to consider things more than I used to,
mm-hmm.
not as reactionary or aggressive. I guess if you want to really put it in a word, I got less testosterone than I used to. just a bit
more mellow.
Mellow, yeah. I don't want to use the word mature because I've always said I'm going from adolescence to senility and planning to bypass maturity. But, yeah, mellow is a good word. So, and for me, being in the air, I always equate it to meditation. Flying is my meditation.
Mm.
I'm up there. I'm completely focused. And I'm sure you can relate and all your listeners will relate that ever any kind of passion, the effect of undertaking your passion is the equivalent effects as going to a meditation class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I say it's medicinal.
Yeah, exactly. For me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm always, my brother-in-law once said to me, he said, Greg, you're always at least 30% more relaxed when you come back from a flight than when you started the flight. So
there you go.
Yeah. I find being up there with the students and them going through the learning process that I've been through many times now in my life, I get a lot of joy out of being on that journey with them and being able to be part of that.
And that was probably my next question was, do you have those moments where you see them achieve, you see them reach a milestone, something clicks in their head and you just get that rush of joy?
Yeah, absolutely. I've had that a couple of times there's a couple of students that have had moments. Actually, just recently we've got a student and she works really, really hard. And I flew with her the other day and we'd had a bit of a chat and we were working on a few things. She just flew so well and did such a great job. And it was a real, it's really nice to be part of that and be involved with that. So I haven't had the opportunity yet to take a student right from initial training all the way through to first solo and working on that. But even going on a navigation exercise with a student and when something really clicks for them, it's just really nice to be part of.
The other thing that I love about, and I didn't think about it much at the time when I was training, but I love about it, and in talking with Paul last week, you know, you have these mentors, right? And so you are that mentor. You are that hero. Kane was my hero. Mm-hmm. You know, Tim Berry was my hero when I was learning to fly. Graham Garrity, our CFI. So these people become part of their journey. As they are part of my journey.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that yet.
Mm. So your name will be etched in their head when they're talking to someone about flying. They're going to talk about Gregory and what Gregory taught me, and we did this and we did that, and yeah.
That's interesting you say that, because that's not something that's clicked in my brain yet, because I'm still the lowest of lowers as far as instructors go, and a rookie in that term. But interesting, yeah.
Well, it's all part of the journey, right?
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely.
I hope to interview this lady you were just talking about, and no doubt she'll talk about you.
Maybe. I'm sure it'll come up. Whether it comes up in terms of flying or just some of the antics that happen on the ground, who knows?
So you've late last year, so late 2022, you've achieved your REO's instructor rating. You're starting to teach people to fly. Like, that's incredible. Where to from here? Where to with the instructor rating? Is there anything else you're working on? What's the future look like for Gregory and the air?
Sure. So the instructor rating has opened my eyes to possibilities of things I can do with aviation. And I've recently decided to go down the commercial pilot route and journey, and just starting that process with acquiring all the textbooks and starting to work way through that and work on commercial exams. So that's a new part of the journey. And the current sort of idea with that is that to get the commercial pilot's license to make me a more versatile pilot and more usable, mm-hmm. I guess, to Paul and Karen or whoever I may work through in the future. I think ultimately I'd like to get my GA instructor rating,
mm-hmm.
Because the teaching side of things is, I've discovered, is really cool, and I seem to be doing okay. I haven't had any complaints yet, but I'm sure they'll come. But beyond that, who knows? I just keep wanting to learn and expand my knowledge and horizons and capabilities. And recently, Christmas last year, my partner and I decided to take the school Cessna 172, and we took it for 2 weeks. And we flew down the eastern side of Australia. As you mentioned in the intro, we're avid scuba divers as well. So we chucked the scuba diving gear in the back of the 172 and a couple of changes of underwear, and we flew from Caboolture down to Maruya on the south coast in New South Wales, mm-hmm. where we've got, I know an instructor that was working down there and could get some hangarage, and we managed to get hold of a car, drove down to Narumu, which is about half an hour away, went scuba diving with fur seals off the coast there. Looking a bit at the south coast, and we flew, basically followed the coast from there all the way around past Eden, over Maroombula, up through Victorian Great Lakes, stopped in to visit my parents in West Gippsland, a little airstrip outside their town, which was really cool. There's a change rather than flying commercially and then an hour and a half drive from Melbourne out to their place. And we followed the coast, the Victorian coast, all the way around to Warrnambool, to see my partner's mother's down there. And then we jumped over to South Australia, Mount Gambier, went scuba diving in a sinkhole out in the middle of Farmer's Paddock and had a look around the limestone coast there, and flew back up through central New South Wales. And we did just over 2,000 nautical miles. We took 2 weeks to do it, nice leisurely pace. And that was like a dream come true. It's something I'd worked for ever since I started learning to fly, was the ability to be able to jump in a plane and just go away for a trip and fly myself. And that was a huge confidence booster for me. particularly since I just finished the instructor rating and was doing some navigation training with students and did that over Christmas. And I don't know, it just seems that whatever I do over the last 12 months is just everything at the moment. I'm at that point in my life where things are clicking and working.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm rolling with it because it's not going to last forever.
Mm.
And just seem to be able to keep achieving things that I've always wanted to do. And that's a credit to the people that I've managed to get as mentors and friends within the industry and in no small part my partner, as I know you understand you have a really supportive wife of what you want to do. I don't think life could be better than at the moment.
Don't say that too loud.
Really, really quietly.
I noticed in the hangar here there's a decathlon, beautiful aircraft.
Yep.
And there's a Technum sitting over there that's got the cowling off.
Yep.
And I don't know if it's a special kind of Technum. It just doesn't have a propeller, but then there's this propeller sitting over on the bench that's slightly less than usable. What happened? Was that your fault?
Well, I don't know whether it was my fault. I was flying the airplane at the time. It's actually very recently happened. It only happened yesterday afternoon. I was doing some circuits with a student. Everything was going really well. The student was flying really well. He's just really at the stage where he's working on nailing the round out and holding off and landing the aeroplane and flying a nice circuit. And we had lovely conditions yesterday afternoon, beautiful Magic Air Queensland afternoon. You're probably aware that we have a very large bin chicken population at this airfield. Bazza, we like to call them. And we're aware that they're there late afternoon, you know, they're going to gather.
Also, bin chicken for the uneducated listeners.
Black-headed ibis.
Ibis. Yep. Large bird for those who are maybe not Australian. Very large bird.
Yep.
You don't want to mess with them in the air.
No. You don't want to mess with them in the air. So we got a lot of those around here. And late afternoon they gather, they're feeding, been out for the day. And so we're doing some circuits. And, you know, I was aware of them, as you are, around this airfield. And beautiful landing, touch and go. We're taking off, climbing out, and there's an ibis sort of 50 to 70 feet above us and off to our left. I've got my eye on him going, don't you do it, don't you do it, you bastard. And as they do, they will dive to get out of the way.
Mm.
And unfortunately, he was above us, and he dove straight through our propeller.
Oh.
And I wasn't going to swerve because we were 200 feet.
Yeah.
Climbing out, and you know, we want to be pretty cautious that close to the ground. And he came through the propeller, bird strike, said, my controls, grabbed hold of the controls and felt the nose of the aeroplane shaking like mad. So something was wrong with the propeller. It wasn't obviously not a glancing blow. And I'm really pleased to say that without even a second's thought, my training kicked in straight away. I didn't have to think about anything, reduced the power on the aeroplane, flew the aeroplane, and we still had plenty of remaining runway ahead of us and landed straight ahead. And it was all a bit of a non-event until we shut down the engine and the propeller came to a stop. And basically I saw that we only had half a propeller left.
Far out.
So that was a bit interesting and a new experience to add to the knowledge bank and the toolbox and the examples to be able to tell students. And
that's it.
Fortunately, my student was really calm and didn't panic and I didn't panic, which was great. So that's my training's done exactly what it's supposed to.
That was the same guy that fired up the Technum just before,
it
right?
It was, yeah. So he's back in the seat. Cool. Yeah. So that was cool. Unfortunately, though, it means our aeroplane's out of action for a few days while we do all the required maintenance checks and sort out a new propeller and make sure she's ready to get back in the air.
And the thing that I loved that I took out of that was that, because knock on wood, knocking my own forehead here. Well, I'd not had an aviation incident in my time. And
you're lucky.
Very, very, very lucky. And I remember one of my old instructors, Ray Garner, saying to me, it's not a matter of if.
It's when.
Like, it's going to happen. Hmm. But I was interested to hear that you said your training kicked in. Like, instantly you just did what you needed to do, power off, nose over, flap, whatever it is, land the aeroplane.
There was no conscious thought process at all yesterday. And I could not tell you in real time what the time frame was from the bird strike to being on the ground and engine stopped. I'm sure it was only a matter of 30 seconds, but in my mind yesterday I had hours.
So it's like bullet time in the Matrix.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's interesting because that's you hear people talking about it and the way time changes in a high stress and high adrenaline situations, and then now to have an experience I can draw on now that everything's okay and there was non-event. Yeah, it's a really good experience to be able to draw a practical example of on the human factors theory that you talk about and learn about as a pilot. Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's not my only ever high stress experience in flying over the years, but it's certainly the most recent and probably one of the most pertinent things that I can draw from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing that.
No dramas at all. It's a good thing to be able to share. A
couple of questions to finish up here. Can you tell us about a memorable experience you had flying a particular aircraft and why it was special to you? You've told us about the 172 over Christmas.
Yes.
Obviously, that was very memorable and you got to share that with your partner. Is there any others that you can think of?
There's how many can I have? there's been a number of special experiences over the years. So I had my 40th last year. My parents, being the awesome parents that they are, organised with my family to pool together for a present, and they got me a joy flight in a T-28 Trojan that we have here on the airfield.
Very nice.
Big sort of post-Second World War trainer, saw some action in Vietnam. Big radial engine, 1,400 horsepower.
Wow.
It was been out for maintenance for probably 4 or 5 months after the gift certificate was issued, and so I've been waiting, and we finally managed to get that just before Christmas, and that was just an awesome experience, to sit in something with so much grunt, and when the radial engine starts, the smoke going everywhere, and the rumbling and the aircraft shaking, and that was a bit of a dream come true, once in a lifetime experience. And we were out over a dam, and he let me have a fly of it, and it's just solid as a rock, and that was just a pleasure. And that probably spurred me towards wanting to do commercial a little bit as well.
Yeah, right. Get into bigger aircraft.
Bigger and more complex. So that was a pretty cool recent experience. And going back a number of years back into the paragliding part of my life, just some of the scenery that you get to fly over, and it's just you and the elements and the wind. And I know we were chatting earlier and you were talking about an experience with a wedge-tail eagle in a sailplane. Had a similar experience in a paraglider and was fortunate enough to be climbing in a thermal with two wedge-tail eagles, wingtip to wingtip, and just circling. And they were happy, I don't know whether they're happy, but they tolerated me being in the thermal with them.
In their airspace
and following them. And that's a pretty magical, special experience something that you'll never forget. So there's been a few things over the years.
From Trojans to eagles.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Trojans to gliders with eagles. And it's just every flight is special and has a memory in some way or other because it's medicine.
Yes. Can you tell us about one of your most fear-filled flights?
If I had to pick something that was my most fearful, it would be the other high stress incident that I was involved with, and that was in paragliding. We were flying out of beautiful Beachmont down at the Gold Coast hinterland. It's just a gorgeous, gorgeous day, and we were getting to the top of thermal, ready to go cross country, and flying with a bunch of mates and my partner that day. And I noticed a glider on the side of the hill in an unusual location. And I knew who it was. It was one of our best friends, and just got on the radio and said, "Hey, just checking you're okay." The glider looked like it had been laid out on the grass, perfectly ready to be packed up. And, people bomb out at the bottom of the hill all the time, but this was an unusual location. And just got on the radio and, "Hey, you okay? Just checking." Did that a couple of times, and I decided that, well, maybe I wasn't going to go cross country, and I started drifting back over to where she'd landed. And we couldn't get hold of her on the radio. As you can imagine, the apprehension and adrenaline levels started to go up, and her husband was actually flying in that day in the air too. And he'd already started to go cross country, and there was those of us left, and we couldn't get hold of her. So as you do, me and another guy decided to start making a descent down towards the hill to land down near where she was. And as we got lower and lower and down along the ridge, we could fly over the top of her, probably no more than half a dozen metres above her. And we just saw her lying on the ground there and not moving with the glider there. So the adrenaline really started to kick in then. And we landed at the bottom of the hill, jumped out of our gear, and the two of us just hoofed it up the hill, up this slope that, I don't reckon I could get up it now. And we got to her and she was screaming. Screaming in pain. So it was clear that she'd had an accident. And that was the first time I'd ever been involved in something like that. So in hindsight, some of my reactions were not great. But we ended up getting emergency services in and a helicopter. We had to lift her off the side of the hill. And yeah, that's probably one of the most fear-filled days in aviation. It wasn't something that happened to me, but it happened to a friend. Cut a long story short, she's all okay. No drama. She hasn't flown since. She doesn't remember a lot of it. And that's one of the reasons why I started to drift away from paragliding, was after that experience, I never sort of really got back to where I was with my flying and, right. and confidence.
Yeah.
But yeah, that long story short, that was a pretty fearful day, a long day, stressful.
Yeah.
A lot of learning experiences came out of it. But yeah, that'd probably be the most fearful.
I was sitting here thinking, oh no, I'm glad to hear it turned out okay.
Yeah, no, she's okay. She made a full recovery. She was only in hospital for like 2 or 3 days. She was extremely lucky. Lots of little microfractures and things like little lung punctures, but didn't require any surgery. They observed her for a few days and healed completely over about 6 month period. So
Wow.
They're really fortunate and lucky story.
Could have gone very differently. Two more questions.
Okay.
If you were given an expense free, and let's assume you have the qualifications, licenses, whatever it might be, opportunity to be endorsed on any airframe, what would it be?
That's a really good question. Immediate answer would be Pilatus PC6 turboporter.
Do you know who said exactly the same?
Yeah, Paul.
Yep.
We know. I've got one up on him. I've actually been on one. And if there was absolutely no expense, something like a Sunderland flying boat back from the 50s, that era of the flying boats, just something majestic like that. The romance involved with that era, I don't know whether it was romance in reality, but the romance and the nostalgia that those kind of aircraft engender, that would be, yeah.
Last question for you. What would be some advice that you'd give to someone who's just starting out in aviation, and perhaps what resources or support would you point them at, apart from Strike Aviation Training?
Sure. Yeah, well, definitely Strike Aviation Training. Give them a plug. What advice? Don't underestimate the amount of work and how long it's going to take. Be prepared for that, and be prepared to go through periods that feel like you're just banging your head against a brick wall trying to get something. An expression that Paul likes to use is, if it was easy, everybody would do it. So, yeah, that's probably a big thing. You know what I'm talking about.
100%.
Yeah.
I'm remembering it.
Yeah.
I'm remembering it. We're doing circuits again and it's costing me a couple $100 an hour. But obviously it hadn't clicked.
Yeah, exactly. And we've all been through it. Yeah. Every pilot goes through it.
So. That's really good advice.
Yeah. So be prepared for that. In terms of resources, there's a lot of really good theory literature out there, and I've probably read most of them. Find the one or the theory books that gel with you. So we've got the big ones. We've got Bob Tate, Aviation Theory. There's a less known one, Jim Davis. I've read Dyson and Holland over the years. In terms of the resources, find the resource material that you find easiest to understand. And then don't worry about the more complex ones that go into a lot more detail and the mathematics, if that's not an area that you're good at. You can come back to those later once you get the base knowledge and all the base theory. You can go into the more complex stuff. And that's what's helped me. The general knowledge is there, and the underlying understanding of the basic concepts is there. To enable me to move through into the and expand the knowledge base. So,
especially as you move into your commercial.
Yeah, I think if I hadn't I think if I'd done this the other way around and not done an instructor rating, and for those out there that don't know, you don't need a commercial license to become an RAOS instructor.
Mm-hmm.
So initially I thought that was going to be, it was really cool to do it, but now it's, I'm viewing it more as a step onto other things. And I think if I'd done things a different way around, it might not have been as good for me.
Honestly, and I think as we've talked today, that's the piece that I've gotten out of the conversation with you, was it's been the right people, the right place, the right time, the right process.
Yep.
So I can see that in your journey. It's just, it's working out the way it needs to work out.
Yeah, and I'm not blind to how lucky I am to have that happen.
Well, I think the other thing is too, Gregory, that I think back to my experience and I put expectations on myself, and you talked about that earlier in this episode. I put expectations on myself to achieve a certain level in a certain time, and it put a lot of stress on, self-induced stress mm-hmm. on me, and I achieved, but I listened, like I've listened to you talk, you know, off the cuff last week when we were having a chat, reflected on my own experience, and I didn't enjoy the flying as much as I could have enjoyed the flying. And now that I haven't flown for so many years, I regret not enjoying the flying. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The flights were fun.
Yep.
But they were purposeful. Like, I wasn't going out just to be in the air.
Yeah,
I was,
sure.
I had this nav to do because I had to get to this step and I wanted to do this test on this date and to do that. It was all, I planned it all.
Sure.
So that's the takeaway I've got from our conversation, is we're all different and we'll do it the way that
we've all got our own journey
to us, but don't lose sight of the trees for the forest. Like,
yeah, that's an interesting expression.
If you've got to do the flight to achieve a purpose, well, make sure you're looking out the window and enjoying the flight on the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Totally agree. But we've all, like you said, we've all got our own journey and we all do things differently, but then we're all only partway through our own journeys too.
Yes. Yeah.
So who knows what's going to come.
100%. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to share your story with me and with the listeners today, Gregory. Wish you all the best in your endeavours, and I'll be watching.
Thank you.
And hopefully we'll have a chat in the future when you've...
Sure, I'd love that.
...got some more stories to tell.
Yeah. No, thank you very much, Damien. And I think it's really cool that you're doing this podcast, and I don't want to use the word every day, but talking to everyday pilots and getting their stories, because I know I'm going to really enjoy listening to other people's stories. So.
Well, that's the reason.
No, thanks for having me, Damien.
Thank you for tuning in to the High Flow Media podcast with our guest, Gregory Machinsky. From his experiences paragliding wingtip to wingtip with the Eagles to his pursuit of a commercial pilot's license, Gregory's story has been one of passion and determination. Join us next time for more fascinating discussions. Subscribe now on your favourite podcast platform, and if you'd like to help out, feel free to leave a review. That'll help spread the word. Alternatively, you can listen to the podcast on the High Fly Media YouTube channel. Music for the podcast is titled Dance With Me by Asher Lee, available at upbeat.io. The High Fly Media podcast, uncovering the people and passion behind aviation, one story at a time.